So my Carolina story, Doug, when you called, I was super excited. I really do love this school. So let me take you back, and real quick, am I talking here or am I here? Okay, great. I can move around a little bit. So how many of you all have ever been on the receiving side of a prank call, you know, where one of your buddies is trying to get the best of you? I mean, we've all kind of gone through that. So I received a call in the spring of 1993, and this call went a little something like this. It said, Charlie, he said, this is Coach Dean Smith. He said, I saw in the paper you've got an academic scholarship. I've watched you play basketball with your high school teammate, Jerry Stackhouse. And he said, I'd like to offer you a spot on the basketball team. And I thought for a second, and I was like, wow. I was like, this is the best impersonation I think I've ever heard of Coach Smith. I'm like, you're kidding. This couldn't be true. So he quickly said, talk to your parents. I mean, it was really him. He said, talk to your parents, think about it, and come back, sleep on it, come back to me. And I said, Coach, I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not sleeping on it. Count me in. I'm here. For me, that was a dream come true. See, I was the kid, the 8-year-old kid, who stayed up and watched every single game in the 1982 season. You remember these late night games at 9 p.m. past my bedtime. I would pull my covers up on my little twin bed, and I had this little transistor radio, and I would secretly listen to it and stay up, you know, every night until the game was over. I could tell you every single statistic that Michael Jordan had, line by line, and I could also tell you Timo Mäkinen. How many of you all remember Timo? You do. Well, he redshirted that year. I also had heard stories of my parents meeting in history class here at Chapel Hill, and I had heard stories, Tom, of my grandfather buying cars with his buddies and selling raffle tickets at the old well to make a little spending money. And I heard stories of his dad coming to school here and his dad of my great, I guess, a great-great-grandfather. So you can tell that I really, really bleed Carolina blue. I was also the kid who would practice for 4 to 5 hours a day. I loved to hear the bounce of the ball, that swish of the net. I loved the caked dirt on your fingertips after playing. And when I got that call from Coach Smith, my life was changed. And I had no idea, Jim, you can probably relate, I had no idea as to why at the time. I knew that I'd learned some basketball skills and I'd become a better basketball player, but I never had no idea that I'd become a better person and learn these life skills, and that he would use the basketball court as a classroom to teach life lessons. So what did I learn? Well, I learned a relentless focus on execution. I mean, he was hyper-organized, hyper-disciplined. I also learned a strong focus on humanity. And he always kept coming back to this common theme that we're all in there, this together, and there's a common thread that moves amongst us, no matter what race or what color or what background or what decisions you had made. And then finally, he had this ownership mentality where he would own it. You know, if we lost, it was because he hadn't prepared us. And if we won, it was because we had done a great job. So those were lessons I took through. And I'll never forget the first day of practice. I go in. And there's the bulletin board. And on that bulletin board, everything is so well organized. 5:33, practice starts, blows the whistle. 5:34, thought for the day. And that was the thought for a day I'll come back to. 5:38, fast drill break number 17. 5:43, fast drill break number 29, whatever it may be. But what I learned is being disciplined and organized led to great execution and great success. He also talked about, I learned a lot about this respect for humanity. And the thoughts for the day, so when we would start, he'd blow his whistle, and there's always a thought for the day that you had to memorize. And are you all familiar with this? Some of you are. And so that thought for the day was something that would broaden you and grow you as an individual. And you'd be standing around the circle, and he would call on one of you to answer the thought for the day. And Greg, if you didn't know it, the whole team was running. I mean, you had to know your thought for the day. But I could remember them. Things like, never judge another until you've walked in his moccasins for a fortnight. What do you do with a mistake? You know, you Ralph it. You recognize it, admit it, learn from it, forget it. So all these different sayings where he was kind of pouring into us and saying, look, the world is bigger than just yourself. After I graduated, I would call him and check in and say hello, and he called back, and he'd always say, "What have you done for others?" And I don't know about you all, but you know, after school, I mean, I was kind of busy, and I'd say, "Yeah, you coach, you know, I volunteered a little bit in college. I mean, that counts." And he would always come back, and he'd say, "What have you done, you know, for others lately?" And I'll never forget it. He had this way, this abiding deep belief that we're all created equal, no matter who you are, and the choices that you've made. And many of you have heard the story about Charlie Scott, where he helped integrate ACC basketball, one of the first great African American players. And you've heard about him helping integrate Chapel Hill. And those stories are great to hear, but they were never personal to me because I wasn't there. I respected them, but I wasn't there. But then one day it happened to me. And it was after a practice, and Coach Smith gathered the folks, and he said, "Gentlemen," he said, "tomorrow I want you to block off 3.5 hours for practice." So I was a little nervous. I was like, "Wow, this is going to be intense. This is going to be intense practice." So we got there the next day, and we're standing around the center circle in the Deem Dome, might I add. And he says, "Gentlemen," he says, load up the buses. Load up on the bus." And so we're kind of a little bit wondering. We get on the bus. And the bus takes out, goes down to 40, heads east on 40, goes about a half hour. And we pull up in this facility, this drab facility, barbed wire is all around the facility. We pull up to the guard gate, two guys with machine guns, and we pull in, they let us in. And we go to the back of the facility, and at the back of the facility, we pull in to this old, old looking gymnasium. And we walk in, and there's cracks in the floor, and you've got bleachers on every single side. And we walk in, and there's inmates surrounding us completely. And they literally feel like they're on top of us. And so he blows the whistle, and we go to the front court, the center court, in this dark and dank gym. And as we're there, he says, "Gentlemen," he said, "any one of us could be here where they are. One wrong decision could lead to another, and you could be there. And any one of us, and also any one of those folks could be here where we are." And I never forget it. I'll never forget it. And we held practice that day. And what he was trying to tell us is that bond of humanity, there's so much more that connects us together than separates us. And so after practice, we got on the bus. And some of the inmates didn't have a chance to watch the practice. And those were the inmates on death row. And so Coach Smith went up and talked to every single one of those folks on death row. Shook their hands. And I just remember being so unbelievably touched. And it changed my life. It completely changed my life. To pivot, the other thing that was really neat about Coach Smith is that he always wanted us to have an ownership mentality and know that we were in it together and that we sacrificed for all. And so on a little bit of a lighter note, some of us would get technical fouls occasionally. And it got to a situation where Coach was unhappy with the numbers of technical fouls, and so one of our guys had a couple technical fouls, and so Coach Smith, and I can't confirm or deny who it is, I can't confirm or deny whether he played for the Detroit Pistons or not. I'll leave that alone. But anyway, so we're at practice, and Coach gets a nice chair in the middle of half court, and he sets one of our friend up on the chair, gives him a glass of lemonade, and he says, "All right, all you other guys, on the end line. You're running suicides while whoever gets technicals from now until evermore, you're watching." And so anyway, made a great point that, hey, we are all in this together, and a great sense of community. Culture and respect was incredible. Didn't matter if you were scoring 20 points or 0.2 points. It didn't matter if you were an All-American or if you were a manager. If you go to the Letterman's walk down the street, it's pretty incredible. They've got all the managers of the basketball teams that are listed. And so that common humanity and creating that common community. Coach Smith was just an exceptional. I'll tell you a kind of a fun story. So about 10 years after I graduated, I was really excited about my wife, who I was dating at the time, to meet Coach Smith. And so we go in the office and get to say hello, and Coach Smith pulls me aside and he says, "Hey, Charlie," he's like, "I was just thinking about you the other day." And I said, "Really? Why, Coach?" He said, "Well, I thought about, and look, I was in the decimal club. I mean, my contributions were behind the decimal rather than in front of the decimal. Let's get that clear." And I like to say I worked my way up to the seventh man the first year that Coach Smith used a six-man rotation. So, he was a wise man, like I tell you, like I said. But anyway, so he pulls me aside. He said, "I was thinking about you." I said, "Coach, why is that?" And he said, "Well, I want you to know that you really helped turn around our season your senior year." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you remember we lost those first three games almost in the ACC. And he said, "You set that pick for Shamon Williams against NC State, and we broke our losing streak, and we turned the season around." And I just thought to myself, "You've got to be kidding. I mean, you've got to be kidding." He had an incredible ability to make you feel special and make you feel important. So my last kind of story that I want to share, and I do want to go back. I skipped a part that I meant to say. When I came to Chapel Hill, I knew my horizons would be expanded, but I had no idea. I knew I would learn X's and O's from the greatest coach, but I had no idea what that meant. I knew I'd be around super smart people at Carolina that would broaden my thinking, and they did. But I had no idea how that would impact my life. And I knew I'd be around some great athletes, you know, Rashid, Jerry, Vince Carter, Antoine Jameson. I mean, these folks are all rafter folks. I mean, their jerseys are in the rafters. But I had no idea how it would change me as a person. Now, I really had no idea on January 5th, 1995. I walk into the locker room, and I go to get taped. And I'm sitting on the area where you get taped, and I'm reading the practice plan. And you had the white squad, which was the top seven guys, and you had the blue squad, which was the bottom seven guys. Now, I was a perennial blue power player. that's where I usually was. But you had the starters, and then in parentheses, you had the substitutes. And so the substitutes at the two-guard spot, it said M. Jordan. And I said, "Well, I'll be doggone." I said, "He's playing baseball." I said, "Well, that's Coach Smith's probably trying to make fun of the guy in the two spot who's trying to, you know, be like Michael Jordan." Well, lo and behold, I got there really early, and I walk in the locker room, and there's only two of us in there, and there's that shiny, bald head, and it's literally the greatest of all time. The greatest of all time. The greatest of all time. The guy who made an industry, created Nike, that played any game better than any other player, anytime, anywhere in the history of the world. And he's sitting there two seats down from my locker. I could not believe it. He practiced with us that day before he went back to the NBA. And it was incredible. I mean, his hands, you know, I'm 6'6", the same size. His hands are probably, you know, so much longer. He'd be at the top of the key, and he'd have the ball, and he'd flip it, and he'd knock out one of our guys underneath the basket. Incredible. He was on the blue squad, and at the end of one time, I remember I messed up, and I threw the ball to someone where it was out of place, and he's like right up here in my face, and he's like, "KYFP, know your, I don't know what the F is, but know your personnel." I was like, "Wow, this is a different league. This is different. But the best was yet to come. The best was at the end of practice, we were running a scrimmage. And so we're down 2 points with 3 seconds to go. And Coach Smith, I told you he was organized. I mean, execution was everything. Discipline, organized, execution. So I'm taking the ball out. Now let's pretend right now that this is the basketball court. And so we've got to go the length of the court right here. And 3 seconds to go, we're down two, we're on the blue squad. So Coach, I'm taking the ball out. He hands the ball to me, and we call 31, he calls 31T. So the three man, I was three, would take it and throw it to the point guard, and the two would come down and set a pick for the one. The one would cross over, and you hit the one right there, and you get a shot off. So Michael Jordan was the two, and Shamon Williams was the one, and so Michael Jordan picked for Shamon, and Shamon's wide open. So I'm like, I get ready to throw the ball, And then I like, and then I'm thinking for a second, and I'm like, the heck with this play. I'm throwing it to Michael Jordan. I'm throwing this to Michael Jordan. So I throw it to Michael Jordan, bad pass, and he kind of catches it, and he's got his hip on it, protecting himself from Jerry Stackhouse. And so he catches the ball, literally at half court. Jerry's all over him, and he goes up, takes one dribble, goes up to shoot. As he goes up to shoot, Jerry goes up, tries to block it, and Jerry'd been kind of jawing at him a little bit. And then Jerry kind of fades past him, so he's kind of hanging in the air, and then Rashid goes up, Rashid kind of comes down. And Jordan shoots the ball, spins back, nothing but the bottom of the net, and he shakes his head, walks off the court, and says, "Somebody tell Stack I do this for a living." And left. He left. So that was definitely a highlight. Jim, how are we doing? Do you want another short MJ story, or are you done?
We're good?
Okay. One last MJ story, and then I'll wrap up. So the next day, he practiced with us again. And at the end of practice, guys are lining up to play one-on-one against him. And so Jerry's playing one-on-one, and so Jordan's at the top of the key, and Jerry's guarding him, and Jordan's got the ball way out here. And he says, "All right, Jerry." He says, "Which way do you want me to go?" We're looking around. We're like, oh, my gosh. We're kind of like. And he said, "Just so you know," he said, "I'm going to dunk on you. Do you want me to go left or right?" And he's looking around. And I'm like, gosh, this is going to be good. And so Jerry's being really intense. And he says, "You're not going to beat me. You're not going to beat me left. You're not going to beat me left." And so Jordan basically goes as hard a dribble ever as I've ever seen right. And then he crosses it over real time. And Jerry had been trying to force him to prevent the drive right. And so Jerry's kind of tripping over himself. And Jordan crosses over, drives to the basket, and just nails it on him, just like he said he did. Looks at Jerry and he says, "You reach, I teach."
Yes.
True story. You reach, I teach. Next. In conclusion, I thought I was going to learn how to be a little bit of a better basketball player. But in reality, I learned life lessons that made me such a better person. Learning how to focus, discipline, execute, really understanding that life is bigger than any one of us, that we're all here on a journey together in a broader sense. And then also taking ownership when things don't go well and giving credit to others when things do go well. So with that, I just want to pass that forward. I hope that I can pass that forward in my life. I hope you all can too. And I just am so filled with so much gratitude for this incredible, incredible, incredible institution. And I love it dearly. And yes, I am proud to be a Tar Heel.